There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
CityWalk is fast becoming a leading fine dining culinary destination with top chefs from all around the world bringing their experience and restaurants to the district. Miras, the company behind CityWalk, are building the area to become a foodie hub with entertainment and a lively social atmosphere. Virgilio Martinez from Lima, brothers Jeff and Chris Galvin from Galvin Restaurant, and Jamie Bissonette and Ken Oringer from Torra & Co. were in Dubai and I caught up with these culinary heroes. With multiple awards between them, including a Michelin star here or there, I was speaking to the cream of the global culinary crop. First up, I spoke to Chef Virgilio Martinez. He's a Peruvian chef and restaurateur, and the chief proprietor of both Lima and Central Peru, the world's leading Peruvian restaurant, which is currently ranked number 5 in the world's 50 best restaurant list. Marie Claire magazine described him as the new star of Lima's gastro sky. Chef Martinez is known for his use of unique ingredients such as potatoes grown at 5,000 metres above sea level, and he's an aficionado of the use of salt and cooks with more than 120 varieties in his restaurant in Lima. When I met him, I started off by asking him that all-important question for successful chefs. Who was the most important influence on your cooking when growing up?
I was always my grandmother. You know, my parents, they were not like foodies, and it was just me. Like, for me, food is a way to connect to people, so I was just trying to connect to people. So, you know, I ended up being a chef in difficult times in Peru, because Peru was living in a very bad situation, so I had to leave. To another country, and I was trained as a chef not in Peru, actually in London.
So travelled internationally, but what was your very first foodie memory? What was the first thing you remember eating as a child?
Well, we used to go with the fishermen and we used to catch the fish fresh. It was something like very, very normal, very, very casual, and we used to make ceviches, like crudos, you know, and on the boat. So that was for me amazing. So we were just carrying fish and limes. You know, the limes were amazing to cook the fish.
And you obviously have restaurants now all over the world. You have London and now in Dubai, of course. How do you manage as a chef to control all of those situations in those kitchens?
Well, I believe a lot on just good people, and I think that's the key thing of the whole thing. Like, you can have lots of chefs and people with you, but they have to be nice people. I'm talking like nice persons. And I always I also trust on leadership. So I need people who has leadership, because they are just not cooks anymore. I mean, the guys who are in charge of the kitchens, they are like promoters of Peruvian gastronomy. They have to know more about cooking. They have to maintain this soul of trying to learn something new all the time, as I do. I'm trying to learn every single day, so I need people like that.
Does technology help? Do you get them to send photos of dishes and things like that?
Well, yeah. I mean, like, I'm very open to technology, to anything. Like, I'm very open to very traditional things, very simple things, social media, whatever is going on now. I'm very open to understand what's going on, because it's the future is now. So we have to deal with all this. I consider my restaurant is very difficult. The reservations in Lima, to get a reservation. So we're working a lot on how to improve our technology on the reservation system. You know, the reservation system has to be, it's the first encounter that you have with a restaurant, actually. So it has to be amazing.
I read that when you opened your first restaurant, you were very interested in watching people's reactions. And I think that's an interesting dynamic. You know, as diners or clientele, we love to watch chefs cooking in the kitchen, and that's part of the theatre for us. As a chef, is it interesting then for you to see the other side? Are they, you're on the stage and they're on the stage as well?
Well, there's more outside, you know. Before I used to think that I had to stay, like, I was very proud of staying in the kitchen, like, 15 hours, 16 hours, even 18 hours. And nowadays, there's no point to be that, even, and now it's illegal, actually. For the food I do, or the food we do, we need to see what's going on outside, and we need to work with different technologies, with different people, with different in a multidisciplinary way. So I do enjoy work with a designer and anthropologist, biologist. We gather all these people, and we have a team of people that they work in different fields. That pushed me to stay sometimes away of the kitchen, and my cliente, my guests, they already know that. I'm like, if I'm not in one restaurant, I'm doing something, something good to improve the experiences.
How's your work-life balance?
Well, it's quite difficult. I have to acknowledge that. I just had I have a kid with my wife. My wife is a chef. So we just live next to our restaurant in Peru. We do travel a lot. I'm crazy about my little kid, but still I have to travel and I have to work very hard. So I'm just trying to get this balance. So yeah, I've been thinking about.
I think every working parent is a work in progress when it comes to that. Now, can we talk about Dubai? So you opened up 2017. Had you visited Dubai much before opening the restaurant here?
Well, I came to Dubai like 6 years ago, I think. Yeah, 6 years ago, and I saw many, many restaurants. It was different than the times like we're living now in Dubai. Like there are many, many restaurants, lots of openings, and last year, it was crazy about Peruvian restaurants openings, or Latin American restaurants, and different trends. So I think, Dubai is a city where everything is different concepts, and everything is moving a lot. I really enjoy this city because it's very vibrant. It's moving very quick. Yeah, sometimes I have not very good feelings about when everything becomes trends and fashion, because that's not good for gastronomy, actually. But in a way, it is good, actually, because it gets people to go to restaurants. It pushes chefs to compete in a very good way. So I think, I think Dubai is grateful for opening a restaurant. And yeah, if you do well, you can see other places.
Obviously, as a chef, you're passionate about ingredients. And are you bringing over many ingredients from Peru? Or what challenges or benefits are you seeing for sourcing here?
Well, we started sourcing with potatoes and ajíes, which are the chilies, the chili peppers. The ones that are coming from Peru, the avocados, the limes. Probably 10 of the most important ingredients to do Peruvian cuisine. And then the rest, still we are working on that. So little by little, we're getting more ingredients, all these different varieties of quinoas. I know that all people know what's quinoa here, but not many people know, all different varieties of quinoas. All people know potatoes and corn, but not many people know all these different varieties of corn. We have almost 4,000 varieties of potatoes already registered. So, actually, you probably go here, if you go to the market, maybe you see maybe 4 varieties. And you don't get access to see at least 30 in one market. So we're trying to get that. This is difficult because we need also to make the ingredients travel not that good. But in the future we'll be getting some ingredients very, very new. And this is what I do with my team. We go to different places in the Amazon, in the Andes, or by the sea. And we gather different ingredients, and those ingredients are unique. So I want Dubai to enjoy these ingredients.
In terms of Peruvian cooking, what would the 3 ingredients that someone would need in their cupboard or their fridge to crack it?
Lime, onions, and I would say maybe coriander, cilantro. These are 2 very, very 2 simple ingredients, but the combination of these 2 makes something Peruvian.
And of your restaurants across the world, is there one dish that you feel really encapsulates you as a chef that you're the most proud of?
I love the dishes that are an interpretation of one landscape of Peru. We have dishes called and we have one dish called Diversity of Corn. This is because when we go to collect to get all these varieties of corn, we see all these beautiful colors like red, brown, black, purple, yellow. So when we plate, we played, you know, always thinking about, you know, when we were harvesting the corn. So that's very powerful because it gives a lot of soul to what we do.
And if people are going to come to your restaurant here in Dubai, what can they expect when they walk through the door and what are they going to get?
Very authentic Peruvian food in a modern way. Peruvian food is very diverse. And what we do in Lima is quite an interpretation of what you get in Lima City. That's why actually we call it Lima. It makes lots of sense. So we wanted to bring what's happening in Lima nowadays. No, what happened in Lima like 20 years ago. What is happening in Lima now? So we have to maintain this connection with connection with chefs, with people, with ingredients. So the idea is that whatever you experience at Lima, if you go to Lima City, you will kind of feel the same.
And I can't let you go without asking you, Chef Vigilio, your foodie fantasy.
My foodie fantasy? I would love to close my restaurants.
Just to close them.
All of them. and just you know, go with my family to the mountains in the Andes of Peru, and stay there for a few years. You know, doing nothing.
Just switching off.
Yeah, it's a fantasy.
Well, I hope you get a holiday soon, Chef Aguilio Martinez. Thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations on all of your achievements in Dubai.
Jamie Bissonette and Ken Oringer are high-profile Boston-based chefs and the force behind the highly successful tapas restaurant Toro. It started in Boston in 2016 and is now thriving in New York, Bangkok, and last year arrived in CityWalk Dubai. Toro & Co. is a colourful and lively high-end Barcelona-style tapas restaurant that serves traditional and modern Spanish-style small plates, made with locally sourced and seasonal ingredients. With so much on their plate, I asked Ken how he takes his coffee, a staple for busy chefs, and his answer was quite surprising.
You know, it's funny. The only thing in the world that I don't have is coffee. So I take my coffee with none in the cup. Just water is good for me.
And Jamie, coffee?
I'm one of those weird people that drinks my coffee different all the time. Sometimes black, sometimes with milk. Today I had a latte. The only thing is I never put sugar in it, unless it's a Cuban coffee.
And what about breakfast this morning, Chef Jamie? What do you have?
For breakfast, I had a pile of cucumbers, some lettuce, some mahamara, yogurt, and a carrot juice.
Something very Arabic this morning. Are you getting involved in... Are you generally a very healthy eater?
I think starting off the day with a healthy breakfast is pretty awesome. Yeah.
It's funny. We both have the same approach to breakfast. I think we're both morning people, which a lot of chefs aren't. So I had cucumbers... some beet greens and muhammara, some hummus, and always, you know, like 10 glasses of water.
That does surprise me. Most chefs do seem to be somewhat nocturnal.
But look how good we look. You know, we take care of ourselves. We're not getting any younger. And to look like this, it takes a lot of effort.
For radio purposes, they are both fresh as daisies today. In terms of coming to Dubai, have there been any challenges in terms of ingredient sourcing that you faced, or are you seeing it more as an opportunity in terms of spices and things available here?
You know, the one thing that we try to do with all the restaurants is make them unique to where they are. So, you know, we don't stress too much on getting what ingredients that we want from, you know, that we have to have from Spain. For us, it's about going to the local souk and finding the spices and adapting. And because, you know, Dubai is a hub to the world, you can get just about anything here anyway, so it's been really fantastic.
So you've been spice souk. What did you buy?
I go to the spice souk every time that I come to Dubai, sometimes multiple times. And we got in pin vinaigrette, we got some curry powder, some black lime, we got some like wild high-altitude Iranian honey. I always get some sort of fenugreek. We got some verven, dried. Can't remember. We bought a lot of stuff yesterday.
And Dubai is a foodie hub for going out. Have you been able to go and enjoy some restaurants during this trip or in previous trips?
This trip's been tough for me. We snuck in. excuse me. Went to M Sharif for a little Lebanese, not a little, a huge Lebanese feast yesterday with a buddy of ours who lives here, and it's, I think, one of the best restaurants in the world. I could not imagine eating better. Arabic food than what they have there, which it's so special. And looking forward to going to, Jamie and I both love Ravi, so looking forward to going there probably late night tonight after the event. Late tonight after the event.
Ravi doesn't show. I've been known to go to Ravi's for breakfast. And there's no shame in that game, I can tell you. And Jamie, what, in terms of Dubai as a hub for chefs, how do you feel it's got in terms of atmosphere? Because obviously there's chefs based here, but you've also got visiting chefs. Do you feel like it's growing as a community?
Yeah, I think what's really interesting about Dubai is that everybody wants to support each other. So there's a lot of camaraderie. Like when I've been here a couple times since the opening, I've met different chefs that are always the first ones to say, this is who I get this from and this is where we get this from. And, you know, they're very supportive of each other, which is really important. I think that community is very strong.
Good. I'm glad everyone's treating you well. You guys obviously had very strong solo careers as chefs. Can you tell me about how the collaboration came about in terms of how did you meet in the first place, Jamie?
You know, it's a really, really long story, but I had heard Chef Ken's name for years from family friends, and then eventually when I was moving to Boston, I wanted to work for the best, and he was the best, so we met that way.
Oh, you were the best. How was he when he came to work for you, Chef Ken?
Well,
he is here.
He was, you know, he was a young, young punky cook, and but he loved food, and it was undeniable that he was so passionate about it. And you know, he read books religiously, which he still does. And it's just, and he just wanted to be. You could tell how he wanted to be great, and so it was really nice to see. Which you don't see very often, just somebody so dedicated to their craft. And again, we hit it off really, really well, and the rest is history.
Have there been any bumps in the road? Can you tell me about the biggest argument that you've ever had?
I think the most we ever argue over is who's going to pick up the check at dinner, because we both want to pick it up. But we never really argue that much. If we do, we both have so much mutual respect for each other that we can always see the other's point of view. So even if we don't talk for 10 or 15 minutes about it, we usually come around or sleep on it and come back, and we always see if one of us feels really strongly about something, we usually can see that other person's point of view and get around it.
Seems like you're almost like brothers in terms of working so much together. Do you socialize together outside of the kitchen and outside of the office?
Yeah, I love hanging out with this guy. I mean, we text 100 times a day, and we'll say, oh, let's go here, let's go there, let's do this. And, drives my wife crazy sometimes. But she loves even traveling with Jamie, too. You know, every time we're out, I'll be like, oh, text Jamie, let's have him meet us after work or this or that. So, yeah, we always want to hang out.
And what can people expect when they walk through the doors of the restaurant?
The really great thing about Toro is it's interesting. Like, it looks interesting. It has a little bit of a polished grit, if that makes sense. It has energy. It's a little bit funky and not what you would expect. And it has our character. You know, it has a lot of color, a lot of raw material. The music's always, just loud enough, just energized enough, and the food is fantastic.
How fantastic. What's your favorite dish on the menu?
You know, we are super lucky to have a great local chef. Well, he's from Barcelona, but he's been in Dubai for almost 8 years, and Oscar is great. And he does paella second to none. It's awesome. And he's so inventive and so passionate that everything that he does is great. So some of the classics that he's taken from Toro Boston, New York to here have translated really well. And some of the innovative things that he does here, like he changes the croquette recipe from Boston to here in a different way, that it makes it so, fun to have our food done in a different set of eyes.
Yeah, that must be really interesting to have your food interpreted by people from different all over the world. Because Dubai really is a cultural hub, and we throw around the term melting pot a lot, but it is. And do you feel there's a dish on the menu that really encapsulates you as a chef, Chef Ken? You're like, yep, that's me on a plate.
It's funny, we have one dish that we have on the menu at all the restaurants, which is the uni spoon. Uni is my favorite food in the world, sea urchin. And so we have this beautiful kind of gold spoon that we put some uni on. Then we put some Savruga caviar. We put a quail egg yolk and then some cecina finely diced, which is kind of like a jamon but made with air-dried beef. And then we just season it with some sea salt and some chive and a tiny bit of lemon juice and a little squirt of soy sauce, and it's kind of this umami bomb when you eat everything together and you chew this luxurious creaminess from the egg yolk and the saltiness from the caviar and the uni, which has a flavor and a creaminess that there's nothing like in the world. So it's just one bite, and then it makes people kind of say, wow, after they put it in their mouth and chew everything together.
That sounds incredible. I like it. Now, I can't let you go without asking you your foodie fantasies. Chef Jamie, I'm starting with you.
I have a fantasy that I could take some time off and live in San Sebastian, Spain, and just, eat incessantly and just learn more. I mean, we love that food. We've been there together. We've been there independently. I know a lot about the region, but I would just love to live there for maybe a month and just really dig deep into the nitty-gritty of what makes the food there so special.
That sounds delicious. And Chef Ken, foodie fantasy, please.
I would say probably two steps. One is I've always been obsessed with everything Japanese, so it'd probably be to be immersed in like a Tokyo and be like a sushi komi. It's at one of the like world's great sushi bars, and just kind of learn from the masters without having to make rice and sweep floors for like 5 years, but just to be able to learn kind of an accelerated program. And then probably to work on an oyster farm in somewhere like France, like in Cap Ferret or Arcachon area, or just outside of Brittany, and just kind of work the land, be on the beach, and just eat oyster all day.
Stay with us as I speak to Chef Jeff Galvin, the younger half of the world-renowned Sibling Chefs. Galvin Restaurant and City Walk opened last September with much anticipation as the newest offering from the Michelin-starred chefs, the Galvin Brothers. Although the food comes from a legacy of award-winning fine dining restaurants with a commitment to high standards, the Galvin Brothers rely on building bonds, a belief in family values, and focusing heavily on hospitality and looking after their customers. The younger half of the famous pair, Jeff Galvin, began his illustrious career washing pots for Anthony Worrell Thompson, no less. After reading about his start in a small neighbourhood restaurant and the climb to his internationally renowned Michelin star winning chef, one of the things I wanted to know is how Jeff manages his time.
Yeah, it is a lot. Looking at it myself, it seems a bit of a whirlwind. But I think the key to everything, always, as we say, is key people and keeping them and people that work with us. It's that's probably our one thing that we have, is very long-term key people that allows us to travel with brands and make it a bit of fun as well at the same time.
We're asking all our chefs today how they take their coffee and what they had for breakfast. So how do you take your coffee, Chef Jeff?
Always very strong, I think, especially this morning. Just really quite simple, just a little bit of skim milk is mine. I drink so much coffee, I have to be careful. It always comes with skim milk.
Are you a bit of a nocturnal character? Most chefs are?
We tend to find ourselves going to bed sort of the early hours of the morning and a very early start. So I think coffee is very important to me, just to get going in the morning. It's always an important part of the day, I think. It's quite strange. During my career, I actually hated coffee as a teenager, and I watched these older chefs all saying to themselves, I need a coffee. So I sort of put up with a taste I didn't like for a couple of weeks, and very soon you get into it. But I've grown to love coffee and learn about it, and it's an important part in the restaurant. It's the last taste people leave your restaurant with, and so it's a very important part of a meal.
I think the chef life can take its toll, it's fair to say. When you look back at crazy hours that you've worked, what was the most extreme time?
I think always openings. I didn't do an opening until I was probably 28 or 29. And I think just that thing of opening where nothing is set in place. It's a new front of house team, new building, new menu. And they can be a crazy 3 months. I remember when Chris and I opened our first restaurant, we were actually sleeping at the restaurant, sleeping on the banquettes, and I think it was around about 35 or 40 days before we actually went home. But I think sometimes it takes that intensity. You've got all of journalists all over you, everything's new, and you so need to get it right immediately. And it takes that energy at the beginning. So I think those are the toughest things, are openings.
And as a working parent, how do you manage to find the balance?
Always very tough. Great to have an older brother who tells you to take the weekend off, do this, do that. So that's good, but you need that. But I think to remain sane, you need a balance in your life.
You mentioned your chef brother, Chris, who got into food a bit ahead of you as an older brother. Do you think you've both got a good palate as a family? Were you a foodie family growing up?
Yeah, we didn't have too much growing up, so we weren't spoiled with nice restaurants. I think the one thing that we had was a grandmother that was a great, great cook who had an extremely large family. And I remember we used to arrive at her house on a Saturday, and she would be cooking for probably about 60 people on a Saturday. It wasn't actually till I got to become a professional cook that I realised she probably started on a Monday morning baking for the following Saturday. You know, and I think that's one thing we've taken is a great thing of hospitality. I think that's is a real advantage to us in restaurants. If you just look after people rather than just giving them three courses.
Are there dishes that have translated around the world then? Is there anything that you think we have to have that on the menu just everywhere that feels like a true Galvin dish?
Yeah, a couple of dishes actually, and it's not for our own ego, it's customers who told us we can't not serve that dish or can't take it off. We have a little lasagna of Dorset crab that we managed to transport. That's very popular at Galvin Dubai. And equally, a bit from our nan's repertoire. She used to cook with a lot of pears and apples and things from her garden. We have a little apple tart tatin, and that's very popular here at Galvin Demoiselle. It's, it really works well, very well received.
And that's what I was going to ask you in terms of challenges around sourcing and seasonality. How does that work around the world?
I think in Dubai it's a real head spinner. You know, we're mad on seasons and the rest of it. And then it's great in Dubai because it feels like you're in the centre of the world, and we've been discovering great Australian beef ingredients from the US. But it's still really picking up a lot of the great European ingredients. I mean, the fish, for example, we get the Mediterranean fish here in Dubai. We actually get it before we get it in London. Flies straight from Marseille, 7 hours, and it's here. And that's a great supplier here of fish who used to be in London for many, many years. And it's incredible, the ingredients that are here. And we've learned things here, and a few bits. Australian truffles we now use in London that we discovered here. So, a bit of a learning curve. But again, you know, it's great. We had our executive chef on the ground 2.5 years in Dubai before we opened, just to learn about the ingredients, suppliers here, build relationships. And that's set us in good stead, I think.
If some people in Dubai will, of course, be familiar with Galvin Brothers and of your international restaurants. But if for anyone new, as they walk through the door, what can they expect at Galvin at City Walk?
I think a warm welcome and great hospitality. I think our food is what it is, and it's transported extremely well. We have a lot of chefs behind the scenes that worked for us for many, many years, side by side. I like to think it's a warm welcome, great food, but above all, great hospitality. I think that's our one mantra. It's probably a bit unusual as chefs.
If I was to come for dinner tomorrow night, what should I order for starter, main and dessert?
I think starter, definitely. If I was at Galvin Demoiselle, I would order our crab lasagna. I would probably go for a little bit of crustacea, some wonderful shellfish that travels extremely well to here. Main course with some wonderful fish and some great sea bass at the moment on the menu. And then dessert. Probably I would take either apricot souffle we've got on at the moment, which is delicious. We just did it yesterday, put it onto the menu. Or our tarte tatin, it's a bit of a signature dish that we have.
Nan's tarte tatin. Now, we can't let you go without finding out, Chef Jeff Galvin, your foodie fantasy. Can you share with us, please?
Probably like a lot of chefs, something quite simple. It's I love truffles and I love simple food, and then probably my very favorite meal, which often when I go to Italy I love to always stick to the most simple restaurants, and always a good tip when you travel to Italy, go at the beginning of the truffle season in December, but probably just a plate of fresh pasta with some white truffle grated on the top. And I think if you're in northern Italy at the time, some wonderful wines to go with that, and great hospitality. So yeah, I think my fantasy probably to be in Piedmont in December. I think that's my fantasy.
That sounds fantastic. Chef Jeff, thank you so much for joining us. It's an absolute honour to have you here in Dubai, and we're all really excited to come and check out Galvin at City Walk. Have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, our pleasure.
If you want to try the food at any of these top chefs, you can head over to City Walk and visit Galvin, Lima, or Toro and Co. Today, we are all about food, glorious food, with live tastings here in the studio, chefs right in front of me talking about the latest foodie news, and your chance to be treated to a fantastic dinner out. After 1 o'clock, we're speaking to celebrity chefs Virgilio Martinez, Chef Jeff Galvin, and duo Jamie Bissonette and Ken Oringo about their eateries at City Walk. But for now, I'm really excited to be joined in the studio by Chef Athena from B Supernatural Kitchen and Gallery Lafayette, Dubai's only 100% raw, vegan, gluten-free, sugar-free restaurant. And cooking for us today, we've got Chef Jet from Wise Quay, a Thai restaurant in the D2 in Barsha Heights. It's quirky, it's fun, it's flavour-packed, and it's all about affordable, street food-inspired dishes. Good afternoon, chefs.
Hi.
Hi there.
You're both in your whites. Chef Jess here in his proper kitchen whites, and Chef Athena, you're in your white t-shirt.
Yeah, casual whites.
Casual whites. Coming up, Chef Jet, you are going to be creating some Thai dishes right here. What can we look forward to?
You know, in Wai Kwai, we have street food. You know, we have really and
so some. I've seen a bit of soup going around, and maybe some spring rolls.
Yeah, we have street food like sem in Bangkok. Uh-huh. On the way to cook from Thailand, you can go to Wai Kwai and you can taste the food there.
I love it. Bangkok street food in Barsha Heights. Who knew? So we'll be trying some dishes later on. But now I think we can have a little bit of
the latest food news.
There's a lot happening in the world of food news. Just come out a couple of days ago, Heston Blumenthal is going to open a restaurant in Dubai. We have a lot of celebrity chefs here. We're lucky enough to get some big names, some based here, some come over, set up their kitchens and come back on a fairly regular basis. We'd like to hear from you this afternoon. Would you go to Heston Blumenthal's new restaurants opening up on The Palm? Chef Athena, one for you.
If he offers some vegan options, then I'll definitely be there.
Well, I'm not hopeful, to be honest. It's going to be at the Royal Atlantis Resort and Residence, which is part of the Atlantis, obviously. But he's known for doing some very historic dishes. The most famous is the meat fruit, which is chicken liver parfait that looks just like an unpeeled mandarin. Not vegan friendly. Roast marrow bone, squab pigeon and goat's milk cheesecake. So we can put a special request in.
Yeah, I mean, his skill set is obviously fantastic. And I grew up watching him on TV and being absolutely inspired by his, like, how unique and creative he is.
It's a different way of thinking entirely, which, you know, I'm sure as a chef must be very interesting to hear what people are doing.
Yeah, vegan or not, it's still fantastic to see different skills and different trends that are coming out in food.
Chef Jet, are there any celebrity chefs that you look up to? Who is your greatest teacher?
My teacher is
back in Bangkok.
Yeah, actually, I learned how to cook from Thailand. You know, this my head chef is all from the hotel, from Thailand.
And who taught you to cook in your family? Who was cooking at home?
Actually, I'm only cooking from my family.
Really?
Yeah.
Who's the best cook in your house when growing up?
Actually, my wife.
Really?
Also, yeah. Oh. She's the one chef also.
Foodie house.
Yeah, we cooking, and we make like from my house I make like papaya salad. We make every day to eat.
Really? Do you cook together?
Yeah, we cook together. We like to eat papaya salad. We like to eat chicken salad and curry.
So who's the better cook than you or your wife? Is she listening?
Yeah.
We'll leave that right there.
Yeah. Anyway.
Now, there's a big kind of
myth around food, and you know, that smelling something can make you hungry. And taking it even further, I think people have used the phrase, I just need to smell, you know, chocolate and I gain weight. But actually, there's a bit more truth in this. A new study's come out from the University of California that's found a link between smelling food and actually gaining weight. This strikes me as very unfair. It hasn't been tested on humans just yet, but they've done an experiment on the digestive process in mice who, when they're exposed to food smells, they split the rodents into groups. They were all fed the same amount. One set were unable to smell the food and the others were, and the ones that could smell the food doubled in weight, whereas the ones who couldn't smell the food lost weight.
There's no hope for me then.
Oh,
all hope
same.
Is gone.
Are there any foods that you just need to smell and your mouth starts watering, Athena?
It sounds ridiculous. I love white rice. Like
the smell
of cooking, of white rice that's being cooked. It's nothing exotic, it's nothing fancy, but I absolutely, the smell of that. And then fresh fruit like pineapple. The smell, like when you get a properly ripe pineapple,
it's super fresh.
Fantastic.
Can I ask you what you both had for breakfast this morning? Athena, what did you have for your breakfast?
Yeah, I had juice, which was grapes and cucumber and mint and orange, which I made at home.
How do you juice a grape?
You just chuck it all in with the stem. I've got like a really lovely slow juicer at home and you chuck the whole bunch in, and then I had that, and then I had four bananas. Oh yeah, that's just a starter.
Four bananas.
Yeah, I have many bananas.
My baby had 3.5 bananas yesterday, and now I'm genuinely concerned what the nappy situation is going to be.
Don't
later
panic,
on,
she'll be very healthy.
Four bananas.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Oh no, I mean, I'll have like a smoothie with 8 or 10 bananas. I mean, I'm no athlete, but I eat a lot of bananas.
That's a lot of potassium. Yeah. Chef Jack, what did you have for your breakfast this morning?
Actually, I only having coffee.
How do you take your coffee?
Orange juice and some cereal.
Do you like strong coffee?
Yeah, normally I like roast coffee. It gets really fresh when you wake up and you having coffee.
Well, yeah, we spoke to some celebrity chefs who we'll be hearing from later on in the show and asked all of them how they take their coffee. Chefs love coffee.
You know, I quit coffee 5 years ago. Yeah, quick coffee 5 years. And whenever I speak to a chef now, the first reaction is, oh my God, I can't believe you drink coffee. But that's it, I'm off it.
Well, as a parent, everyone assumes that I drink coffee and I don't. I just never have.
Yeah.
So one thing when I go to the doctor and the doctor says, you know, how much caffeine do you have? And I smugly go,
none.
And that's the only thing I can be smug about. And I just, it's not actually about a health choice. I just never really liked the taste. But it has, the more chefs I meet, the more I realise that you guys need coffee to keep you up in the morning, keep you going through that hectic kitchen schedule. In more food news, a new study's come out from researchers in Maastricht University in Holland, and I think you guys are going to be pleased about this. What nuts? Basically, a handful of nuts or peanuts a day, it's about 10 grams, can cut your risk of dying from respiratory disease, neuro diseases, diabetes, cancer, and cardiovascular diseases. The trial's been running on 120,000 Dutch men and women since 1986. Now, is this a surprise to you, Athena? You incorporate nuts into quite a lot of your dishes.
Yeah, we do, and especially with raw food, you've got such a large range of textures with all different kinds of nuts. But we just always make sure that they're soaked, and either soaked and then dehydrated or soaked and sprouted.
Why is that?
Which will get rid of the phytic acid, which is a digestive inhibitor. So it means not only if you're eating that nut, it can inhibit the digestion of the nut itself, but whatever you're combining with, it inhibits the digestion of that also. So they're always soaked and either dehydrated or then soaked and used straight away.
That sounds really time consuming.
You know, it is, but it's worth it. Like, some people get funny digestion when they have nuts, and they just don't sit well. And what with the soaking and sprouting, it makes a massive difference.
Can I ask, I mean, obviously, as if you go along to be supernatural, we don't really care about how long the process takes, because that's your job as a
exactly.
as a chef, right? But what's on the menu at the moment that's using any kind of nut milks, or how are you using nuts in a kind of creative way?
We've got a macadamia nut milk latte on at the moment, and macadamia nut milk, it really is, it's like single cream. It has the most creamy, delicious, neutral taste. It's wonderful. We always make fresh almond milk for all of our drinks, and then we have different cheeses. We have a beetroot truffle ravioli, which has fermented cashew cheese, and we use almonds as in the pad thai that I brought with me today. So a wide range of nuts all the time.
So pad thai, Chef Jet, you are using peanuts in your pad thai?
Yes, peanut we're making in our restaurant, and we toast this make more aroma. You can get the smell of nut when you're eating, and you very tasty for the pad thai, you know.
We're going to be trying some pad thais later in the show. The bad news, unfortunately, the studies show that protective properties of peanuts don't seem to translate to peanut butter because of the salt and the vegetable oils that are added to most of the commercial brands. Obviously, you're making it yourself, it's a little bit different, so it's not a reason to go crazy on the old Reese's peanut cups. Bad news, I'm afraid. Now, you are my keeper of the clues this afternoon, Athena, and we want to treat you, not you, Athena, sorry to a delicious dinner at White Quai, Chef Jet's fantastic restaurant in the Dusit D2. So it's not going to be that easy. You've got to, well, let's just say, you've got to do this.
Guess the ingredient.
Chef Athena, what is our first clue today, please?
Today's mystery ingredient has been used in cooking and herbal medicine for at least 5,000 years. It was used by locals in India for a variety of medical issues, and the plant also has deep historical roots in Asian and African cultures, being cultivated in Southeast Asia for the past 2,000 years.
Historical ingredient this afternoon. If you would like to have a guess, get in touch 4001 on the SMS line or use the Dubai Messenger app. Your guess and your name, and we'll put you in the draw to win 500 dirhams to spend at Wise Quiet and enjoy their fantastic new terrace while the weather is amazing. So we talked to Heston Blumenthal, who has obviously been criticised a fair bit in terms of reviews, but is also widely revered. But I just wanted to read out a little bit of my favourite restaurant review of recent weeks. Now, Jay Rayner writes in The Guardian Observer in the UK, and he does not suffer fools gladly. His reviews are widely shared. The one I'm going to read has been shared 22,000 times and has been read countless times. It's Farm Girl Cafe in Chelsea, which is actually a vegan restaurant, which I didn't realise until I read the review. The headline is, "We don't stay for dessert because we have suffered enough." There's something about a really cutting restaurant review that people just love. It's I'm sure as a chef it must be very difficult to handle, but as a punter, there's something about the words. So he starts off by saying, "The menu at the Farm Girl Cafe features lots of initials. There's V for vegan, there's GF for gluten-free, there's DF for dairy-free. I think they're missing a few. There should be TF for taste-free, JF for joy-free, and AAHYWEH for abandon all hope, ye who enter here." He goes on to say, "The food was so bad, a nearby Yorkshire Terrier started to look more appetising." So if you want to read that, it's currently on The Guardian. It's Farm Girl Cafe in Chelsea. If you've got any favourite restaurant reviews, do let us know, 4001. But yeah, "We do not stay for dessert because we have suffered enough." He says, he whips up my phone and discovers there's a branch of Honest Burgers nearby. Which he says puts everything right in the world. Joining us on the show, we've just had Kelvin Kelly come in, who's the executive chef at the Dusit D2. And I want to hear a bit more about the restaurant while Chef Jet is dishing up over there. Chef, what's happening over there at Barsha Heights?
Hey, Helena and Athena. Chef AI. Athena. So, obviously, Jet, I've stepped in for Chef Jet, and he's busy cooking up a storm in the back here. Behind me, it smells delicious.
Doesn't it just? I've had some, think from fried rice with shrimp just put in front of me.
Oh, yeah.
And it smells incredible.
So that's actually a tom yum fried rice.
Oh, so it's got the flavour of the tom yum soup in the rice.
Exactly.
Oh, fantastic. Exactly. Okay, I'm gonna get stuck in. But it all seems very street food inspired.
Correct. So a lot of the dishes are inspired by Chef Jet. He has obviously from, I think he's just over north of Bangkok, and a lot of the dishes are based on his interpretation of what Thai food and Thai street to food is. So he's put a lot of his own flair in there, which I think is fantastic, and come on over and try it. It is phenomenal.
What can we expect when we walk through the door? What's it look like? What's the atmosphere like?
You'll be shocked at first. You'll have a look. You'll look around and say, "Okay, this doesn't resemble any street Thai food." But then once you take your first step into the door, you're like, "Oh wow, this is actually really cool." The restaurant and the interior is inspired around old school Thai films.
Cinema.
Yeah, cinema. Wow. So we actually have some cinema chairs there from Thailand.
That's
so the old school 80s, 90s, 70s, 80s.
So super quirky.
Yeah, exactly. Super quirky. A lot of bright colors. All the staff are obviously Thai. And you're greeted with a, forgive me if I get this wrong, but Sawadee ka.
Sawadee ka.
That's it.
So authentic from start to finish.
Yeah.
I'm asking lots of questions because I'm trying to have bites of my Tom Yum fried rice in between.
Go ahead.
It is delicious.
And can you get
so fragrant? Yeah.
Yeah. You get
really
that,
tangy.
Exactly. You get that whole soup flavor coming through, all those flavors, and that's one thing I love about Thai food, is that once you put, and if it's cooked correctly and you've used the fresh and right ingredients, you put that in your mouth and all your taste buds are just, all your senses are just working at the same time.
And really plump shrimp here, obviously the fried egg in there as well.
Yeah.
It's real comfort food. This is what I'd want if I felt, you know, I was getting a little cold coming on.
Yeah, exactly.
That kind
exactly.
of thing.
It's got a little bit of a bite to it, got a little punch. It's really, really good.
Delicious. Now, we teased you a little bit before the break, just talking about addictive foods. Calvin Kelly, executive
yes.
chef, what are you addicted to food-wise?
I don't know if I should say this next to Chef Athena.
Everyone's scared to speak next to me.
I am addicted to meat. Unfortunately, I can't give up meat. But particularly, I love a great lamb chop.
When it's done properly.
Yeah, when it's done just right with a little bit of thyme and butter, melted butter over it. It's like home.
Like home.
That's exactly what it is.
Where are you from?
I'm from South Africa.
Okay. So yeah, some good high quality meat then.
Good high quality meat, yeah.
Chef Jet, thank you so much. This Tom Yum fried rice is amazing. What's your favorite food? What do you love to eat yourself?
For me, I always having the curry, you know.
Curries.
In the Wai Kwai also, so many customer coming. They like to having the green curry chicken.
Chicken green okay. curry.
Yeah.
And Athena, I'm going to tell the top 10 most addictive foods, but I want to see if yours is on that list. What's
okay.
what's your number one addictive food? What if it's in the house and you know it's calling to you from the fridge or the cupboard, what can't you ignore siren call of?
You know, I'm since going vegan, I'm completely in love with jackfruit. I'm in love with jackfruit, whether it's ripe and like sticky and yellow and it literally tastes like bubble gum. And if it's young green jackfruit, you make it into the texture of pulled pork and it's phenomenal.
Yeah, really, really popular meat substitute at the
moment.
Yeah,
exactly.
So no surprises for the number one most addictive food is pizza. Pizza, chocolate, crisp, biscuit, ice cream, chips, cheeseburgers, fizzy drinks, non-diet, cake and cheese are the top 10 most addictive, scientifically speaking, foods. I mean, I think we can all understand why that would be.
Yeah.
From a chef's point of view, it's to do with the fat. Really, it's the fat and the and raising that blood sugar quickly. So it's based on a Colorado State University study. But they also talked about the least addictive foods. And I personally have never been on a cucumber binge. And I can reveal the cucumber is the least addictive food. So the least addictive, cucumber, carrots, beans, apple, brown rice, broccoli, bananas. Athena, you had 4 bananas this morning.
I know. It's once you change your taste buds, you can't go back.
Salmon. Now, smoked salmon was my big kind of pregnancy craving, so I find that a bit strange. Corn and strawberries. Which I find those quite a bit depressing, actually. But what they're saying is the most addictive foods are high in fat, going to raise that blood sugar quickly, whereas the least addictive foods are free from refined carbohydrates. And what the author of the study is saying, that actually it's a good step towards identifying specific foods and the property foods that trigger this addictive response. So an interesting one. We'd love to know what you're addicted to this afternoon on the food front. Cheese is it is. That's got to be up there.
Yeah.
4001. We're joined by Chef Jet, who's here from Wise Kwai in Dusit D2 in Barsha Heights, and Executive Chef Calvin Kelly. And we want to treat you to dinner at Chef Jet Restaurant. We've given away one mystery clue, but I think maybe it's time for one more.
Guess the ingredient.
Chef Athena, you are keeper of my clues this afternoon. What is the second mystery clue?
Today's mystery ingredient is native to tropical regions such as Africa, Asia, and Oceania. Excuse me.
Wait for me.
Yeah. Where it has been used traditionally for medical, cosmetic, and culinary purposes. It is essential in many Asian cuisines, especially Thai dishes, giving them a subtle citrus flavor.
Excuse me while I eat my Yum Tum fried rice. So if you know what our mystery ingredient is this afternoon, get in touch 4001 or just send a little message via the Dubai Eye Messenger app. Now, food waste is a really big topic, and I'm sure as executive chef,
yep.
you're very aware of working in a, you know, in a kind of commercial space and making sure you're getting the best out of your ingredients, not wasting any money. But at home, there are things, some things that we could be doing more, and a new study has come out to really battle unnecessary waste. Now, in the UK, approximately 24 million slices of bread are thrown away every single day by not eating their bread in time. And there's a really simple fix for this. Any guesses in the studio? What could we be doing to stop bread waste?
Make your own.
Oh.
As you need it.
any guesses? Simple.
Yeah, I think just buy smaller loaves.
Buy smaller loaves. Keep it in the freezer.
All that, yeah.
So there's a new study that's saying, it's called Love Food, Hate Waste, has launched a campaign called Make Toast, Not Waste, which aims to educate us about how you can keep your bread fresh for longer. So basically, 69% of adults in the UK are throwing away bread every single week. And this is really ridiculous. One in four people confess they don't know how to freeze bread.
How?
Just put it in the freezer. Yeah. I mean, people, get a clue. But I think that is quite a valid thing. And what we normally do is we'll buy a loaf, we'll use half of it fresh and then stick the rest of it in the freezer. So my freezer's full of kind of ends of loaves, really. But an interesting thing to be mindful of, because things do go off quite quickly here in the region because of heat.
Correct.
So definitely be mindful of that food waste. We've got Chef Jet from Wise Quay, a fantastic Thai restaurant in the Dusit D2 in Barsha Heights. Also in the studio, we've got an executive chef from the Dusit, Kelvin Kelly, who was wiping his mouth after eating some of Chef Athena's pad Thai. So we're having a bit of a Thai fest this afternoon, guys. Athena, we've just been tucking into your version of a pad Thai.
Yeah.
It's unlike anything I've had before, to be honest. So fresh, so vibrant, really great spice level.
Thank you.
What's in it?
So it's a raw vegan version of a pad Thai. It's zucchini noodles, carrots, cabbage, and then a dressing made from sprouted raw almonds, sun-dried tomatoes, which I know are not traditional at all.
Not at all.
Yeah, galangal, ginger, kefir lime leaves, garlic.
Wow.
Lime juice. And then there's some sprinkles on top, which is like toasted coconut and cashew nuts, black sesame seeds, chili, and more lime leaves, because I love lime leaves.
Oh, it's so delicious.
Thanks.
Can I ask you about vegan food in terms of calories? Because you talked about having a dressing there made from sprouting almonds. Is it a bit of a misconception that vegan food is low calories? Because it can be obviously very nutritious, but what about the calorie count?
There's so many different ways to eat vegan. Obviously, if you're having very high nut content, that's going to raise your calories. If you're having lots of oil, it's going to raise your calories. We try and use minimal oil in the restaurant. We do use nuts, but we're bulking it out with things like, as I said, sun-dried tomatoes, fresh tomatoes, and other ingredients. So you're stretching the fat in a recipe. It's not just a concentrated, heavy dish full of nuts. And yeah, calorie wise it can be as calorific as you like,
because you can eat vegan and just eat chips.
Oh yeah, and yeah, right? Deep fried. Yeah, of course you can be as calorific as you like or as health conscious as you like. So whole foods, plant based for health is what I promote, but for ethics, just vegan, eat whatever you like.
Have you ever tasted anything like this before, Chef Kelvin?
No, I was actually really surprised. One of the ingredients that should be on those lists of no-goes is zucchini.
Okay.
Not a fan of zucchini, and I was hesitant to put this in my mouth, but when I did, it was just a burst of flavor. The zucchini was crunchy. It was really, really good. A phenomenal, really, really good dish.
Thank you very much.
I make zucchini noodles quite a lot at home, and I never get it right. I don't think I drain them enough. I don't know, but they always seem soggy. Can you give us a little tip on how to make good
zucchini?
Don't
cook them.
Just don't.
You'll have a dressing, and you'll want to massage the dressing in, and then you'll get the perfect texture. There's no need to cook them, because if you have any sort of acidity in the dressing, it's going to break it down anyway.
Okay.
So no more cooking.
Another zoodle tip. Now, Chef Jet has just put some spring rolls in front of us. We've had a question on the text line, Chef Jet, asking... saying the food sounds delicious. Does Chef Jet have all Thai chefs in the restaurant?
Yeah, we have all very good team, you know, this. All of the our chefs have too much experience. Especially everybody working in Dusit, you know. Dusit is the big name in Thailand on our hotel. And now we are one team in Wai Kwai. So everybody coming to make the very good food there. So I hope everybody will come to taste the food in Wai Kwai.
Super authentic. So Thai chefs, Thai servers, I've heard fantastic things about the service as well in terms of really helping people navigate through that menu. And I think that's, you know, if you're trying a cuisine that you're not that familiar with, it can be a bit intimidating.
Absolutely. A lot of the dishes, or actually all the dishes on the menu are in Thai. They do have English descriptions to them, but we have kept it traditional and kept the name in Thai. So that is difficult to navigate in itself. So we do have great servers, and the chefs do come out of the kitchens to explain the dishes to a diner.
Chef Jet, what is in the spring roll? What ingredients are inside?
Inside we have carrot, we have grass noodle, but we have some shiitake mushroom, okay? And we have special thing inside, because another plate we're not using coriander root. My recipe. So I put some coriander root to make more flavor, more aroma.
It's really
so when you taste, you will get the flavor of the traditional way, you know that.
But it's not coriander kind of how I've had it before, which is why I was quite intrigued actually. And what about the dressing?
The dressing, we use the sweet palm sauce, you know. That's we use this one vinegar, you know, vinegar and palm seeds. Even if you go to Thailand, you will get the palm seed, this one.
And this is a starter on the menu at the restaurant.
Yeah.
How would you do a spring roll, Athena? Your kind of way of looking at things is you've got to be creative, right? I think that's a big misconception about vegan, is you're going to go and if you go to be supernatural, it's just going to be a salad.
Yeah, no, forget it. Salad is like the last thing on our menu.
So what's doing well on the menu at the moment?
We have a truffle ravioli pizza that sells really well.
I would never think that could be vegan.
Yeah, and then we have a version. It's like blasphemy saying these things in front of a Thai chef, but I have a crispy duck. A crispy not duck roll.
How do you do not duck?
Not duck roll, yeah. And then the wrapper is made from just dehydrated fresh young coconut meat, Thai coconuts, and courgette. And we make a dehydrated wrap out of that. And then a marinated dehydrated crispy onions with lots and lots of spices to make the duck.
Fantastic. Yeah. Chef, this spring roll is delicious. I think that's exactly it. It's unexpected as well. It tastes like as I hoped a spring roll would taste. But by using, I'd never had shiitake mushrooms in a spring roll, for instance, before. So it sounds like you're really putting your own twist on some traditional Thai street food. And it's still all super affordable, Chef Calvin, is that right?
Yeah, correct. All the prices are super affordable. You got the prize or gift.
Yeah, 500 dirhams to spend this afternoon.
That's a massive feast for at least 8 people.
Really?
Yeah, we have tried to be extremely price competitive in the market. We are using fresh ingredients. We are sourcing them ourselves, which we're able to bring the cost down.
I like that. So if you would like to win a 500 dirham voucher spend at Wide Kwai, which is the Dusit D2 in Barsha Heights, you'll just need to do this.
Guess the ingredient.
Chef Athena, your keeper of the clues this afternoon. Clue number 3, please.
Also referred to as Simbopogon, today's mystery ingredient is one of approximately 55 other species of grasses in the Poke family of grasses. Of these multiple varieties, the two most popular ones are Simbopogon citratus and Simbopogon flexitus, though both can be used to produce essential oils. The former is largely used for culinary purposes, whereas the latter is most popular for use in essential oils and perfumes.
Did very well with the Latin name there.
I tried.
Hats off. So if you know what this mystery ingredient is, do get in touch, 4001 on the text line, or you can give us a call, 04-423-1010. Now, I asked you earlier, what dish do you think the Queen doesn't eat? Any guesses, you guys? If you were, you know, in a stately position and meeting people all the time, what ingredients or dishes would you stay away from?
I think onion would be one of them, only because of the odor it leaves on your breath. And if you are talking closely with people, I can't imagine she speaks really loudly.
No,
so she would have to get super close to you. Mm-hmm. So I would say onion.
Onion, Chef Athena?
I can't guess because I already know the answer, so it's not fair for me to guess.
You overheard me talking.
Yeah, I overheard.
I will tell you what Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II does not eat. She doesn't eat starchy foods at all. And I would say basically being the Queen probably isn't all it cracked up to be, because she doesn't eat pasta or potatoes or garlic. three pretty happy foods. Garlic, I think, Chef Kelvin, ties into what you're saying in terms of the breath factor. But her diet tends to revolve around grilled fish or chicken with two types of vegetables. It's so English, isn't it?
Meat and two veg.
Yes, and big bowls of salad and fresh fruit. Speaking of fruit, she has a very particular way of maximizing the potential of bananas. We're going down a real banana theme this afternoon.
I'm very happy about that.
I've got a confession for you. I'm almost phobic of bananas.
Like, really?
Yeah, weirdly phobic.
Because the flavor-wise, or...?
It's the noise that people make when they eat them, like that...
I hate the noise when anyone eats food. I don't like the noise regardless of what they're eating, so I understand
that.
You know what
I think it was? I did like them as a child, but then I used to get tonsillitis a lot as a baby, so I used to get this penicillin banana-flavoured medicine, and that
I
just...
I've had it.
Rank! And that really turned me off. And since having children, I've had to overcome the banana phobia because it's such an easy thing to give to kids.
Yeah.
And that is a true sign of my love for my children.
I don't like bananas at all.
Don't you?
The texture of bananas is just...
Meeting of minds.
It freaks me out.
But there's so many varieties of them. You can't hate them all. There's so many.
I will admit that every morning I have a smoothie and there is a banana that goes in there.
I can taste it. Whenever I have a smoothie, I'm like, they say there's no banana. I know there's banana in the smoothie. I can have banana chips. I would lower myself to that. But there's something about it. And since I've admitted it, other people have come forward and admitted that they've got a bit of a food phobia about bananas.
Mine's not a phobia. It's just, don't put words in my mouth. I'm not a phobia.
Not weird like you, Helen. My old boss used to, I could smell it across an office. Like if someone in the far corner was unpeeling a banana, I'd be like, I'm out of here. My old boss used to rub banana skins on the keyboard of my computer.
Evil.
Yeah. Evil. Any food phobias for you, Thien? Anything you like, couldn't?
No, there were quite a few things. Before I was vegan, I used to despise watermelon,
really?
It. And I lived in I used to live in Athens, and the melons were fantastic over there, and they used to make me gag. And
I
hated it. But since going vegan, I am addicted to all melon, and I love watermelon. It's such a weird change from my taste buds are completely transformed. I love melon now.
We had Chef John on the Thursday brunch show last week on Cuisinera Uno, and he made a fake beef carpaccio, and we tasted it, and I was so intrigued by what it could have been, and it was dehydrated.
I bet that's fantastic.
Delicious with rocket, and it was tasted sweet in but not in fruit.
Yeah,
so unexpected.
We have a faux smoked salmon on the menu, which is made with dehydrated, smoked, and marinated papaya. And people never ever guess it's papaya, but it is. So it's amazing what you can do with fruits.
It's all about food, glorious food this afternoon. And we're live in the Dubai Eye Studio 103.8 until 2 o'clock this afternoon. And it is an absolute feast here in the studio. Amazing flavours, amazing tastes. I'm really excited to be joined by Chef Athena, who wasn't supposed to cook for us this afternoon, but she brought in a cheeky pad thai from B Supernatural Kitchen in Gallery Lafayette. And that's Dubai's only 100% raw, vegan, gluten-free and sugar-free restaurant. And cooking for us as well, we've got Chef Jet, fantastic name, by the way, from Wai Kwai, which is a Thai restaurant in the Dusit D2 in Barsha Heights. It's quirky, it's fun, it's flavour-packed, and we are getting some of those brilliant flavours right here. And Executive Chef Kelvin Kelly from Dusit D2 is here as well. Now, we've just had some Thai green chicken curry put in front of us. Chef Jet, what are the main ingredients in this? What are the real star ingredients?
Yeah, we have the Thai eggplant, in Thailand.
Is it smaller, the Thai eggplant?
Yeah, we have two kinds of the eggplant. One is the raw eggplant, so it's get the flavor is like crunchy, and the small one is a little bit bitter, but this one make balanced taste, when you taste it, you will get more flavor. When you eat sweet and salty and eat with steamed rice, it come together very good.
It's a real characteristic of Thai cooking, that balance of sweet and salty and tang, using that lime and the spices. Yeah. And coconut milk in here, how do you make the sauce for the curry?
The sauce, we use the green curry that we make. I can guarantee you we are the best the Thai restaurant.
Fighting talk there, Chef Jet.
Yeah.
Love it.
If you go everywhere in Dubai, you can try mini restaurant.
It's always on a Thai menu, isn't it? The red Thai curry as well, it's a real constant. What do you think makes yours a bit special, Chef Kelvin? What's happening at the Do Sit Do Two that you think is setting you ahead of the pack?
I think the fact that we use fresh ingredients to make the paste. The paste is cooked. Chef Jet puts his own twist on things. As you can see in the spring roll, he puts his own twist on there with the shiitake mushroom. So that's what I think is set apart from the rest.
You've got Thai chefs, right?
Yeah. I mean, why?
Well, of course.
When I cooking, I'm making slow fry, and we toast the curry. We put the coconut, then we put the sweet basil leaf, and make more flavor. When you can get aroma, you can make really nice curry.
And I think that's a really interesting way of kind of doing it slowly, doing it properly, and not,
yeah,
because it can be a real, you know, quick and easy throwaway dish, but taking real care both, yeah, with the ingredients and the preparation. And it is quite a high spice level, but it's not overwhelming. I think it's because that paste has been cooked slowly. It has, the ingredients haven't been shocked in the pan, and then, yeah, you get that bitterness from it. It's not that at all.
No, and I've seen Chef Jed prepare this paste, and the chilies he uses, he inspects those chilies, makes sure they are the right color, the right size.
Are you very particular?
Mm.
Bit of a control freak?
You know, we take care of the curry. You know, the curry, we have to take care of the taste, take care of the flavor. This only, you know.
Yeah. Now, if you're getting a little bit hungry talking about the dishes that we are eating in the studio this afternoon, we've had an amazing Tom Yung fried rice, we've had a spring roll, we're now having the Thai green chicken curry, and there's one more to come. I can see it. It's like kind of tempting me over there. But if you would like to go and try the amazing, authentic, street food-inspired cuisine at Wai Thai in Do Sit D2, this is your chance. But we're not going to make it easy. I think it's time for our fourth clue.
Guess the ingredient.
Chef Athena, keeper of the clues, what's next?
The taste of today's mystery ingredient is quite light and does not overpower other flavours in a dish. It also adds a lightly sharp and tangy taste. Commonly used in soups, teas and curries, it is most commonly used in dried and powdered form, but may also be used fresh.
I'm eating, I'm really sorry. If you know, 4001 on the SMS line, or use the Dubai iMessenger app. It's free for download on iOS or on Android, and it's free to use. You can message us as much as you want. 4001, put your guess. And we've got some good guesses coming in. We've also got some pretty out there guesses as well. There'll be one more clue coming up. So 4001, your guess, your name, and we'll put you into the draw to win 500 dirhams to spend at Wai Thai, which is in the Do Sit D2. And Chef Kelvin, you said 500 dirhams is going to go a long way.
Yeah, it's going to go a long way. I have a great feast with that.
You think 8 people might be able to treat to dinner?
Yeah, 8 people. 8 women, let's say.
Hey.
What are you trying to say?
Don't say that. We can eat. What's your favourite dish on the menu, Kelvin?
It would have to be the crispy beef.
Ooh.
The crispy beef, yeah. Just so much flavour, so much... I don't know. It's so difficult to describe that dish. But it's a simple dish, but it's just so good.
Gets you every time. Chef Jack, tell us about that crispy beef. What's in it?
Yeah, the crispy beef, marination beef, you know, like we have beef, Australian beef, to marinate with our Thai herb. You know, we have lemongrass, galangka, kaffir lamb leaf.
Don't give too much away there.
Yeah, okay. And some chili, you know, the... Chili we toast this in we make in the kitchen and marination, you know. And after that we have to keep for some time to,
so it marinates for a long time to really get those flavours into the meat.
Then we fry.
And what's it served with?
Yeah.
With rice, noodles?
It's served just with the beef on its
really?
Own.
Really?
Yeah.
And that confident.
We have we have the sauce, it's tamarind sauce, you know. Make balance the taste.
Oh, it sounds delicious.
And
I really like the idea of coming to a place that's casual as well. So you could come along in kind of jeans, flip-flops.
Absolutely.
Super casual.
We're not going to chase you out. We're open to all. We are inclusive. All the outlets in the hotel are very inclusive. So
super cash.
Yep.
Love that. 103.8. Welcome back. It's 104. It's Thursday and the weekend is nearly here. We're getting you in the mood for a real foodie time this weekend with our Thursday brunch show. And we really have been treated to some amazing dishes in the studio this afternoon. I'm Helen Farmer and I'm joined by Chef Athena from B Supernatural Kitchen in Gallery Lafayette, Chef Jet and Chef Kelvin Kelly from the Doucet D2 in Barsha Heights, who are here with some amazing Thai dishes from restaurant Wise Quine. And you've got a new terrace open there. All sounds like it's happening. Quirky, flavour-packed, fun, street food-inspired Thai dishes. We've tried spring rolls. I've had just had an amazing tom yum soup, which is so flavourful. I'm really, I know. And Athena, they've even done a special soup for you as a vegan. What are you having?
I haven't stopped eating it. It's a coconut soup and it's fantastic. It's so nice that non-vegan restaurants, when they put effort in to make a flavourful dish, and it's not just like the vegan option is overlooked and it's boring and flavourless. This is, well, I'm going to finish the whole thing.
Well, I'll come back to you. I'll let you enjoy your soup. But we think it's a bit unfair for us to be trying all these dishes this afternoon, and we would really like to treat you to dinner at Wide Choir, which is at Doucet D2 in Barsha Heights. So if you'd like to win 500 dirhams, which Executive Chef Kelvin Kelly says is going to go a long way at this Thai eatery, you just need to guess the ingredient. We've had a few clues already, but we've got our last one coming up. So for 500 dirhams to spend, you'll just need to
guess the ingredient.
Final clue, Chef Athena.
Our mystery ingredient contains several flavonoids that function as antioxidants and anti-inflammatory agents. In their antioxidant capacity, flavonoids prevent damage to cells that can lead to long-term diseases such as heart disease or arthritis. Due to its ability to reduce fever, today's mystery ingredient earned the name fever grass in some cultures.
Now, I can't let you guys go without asking you, first of all, Chef Kelvin, what's your
food fantasy?
What's your food fantasy, Chef Kelvin? And I really want you to go out there. You're South African, you're working with Thai food, you're working with cuisines from all over the world. But what's your food fantasy?
I think mine is predictable. Yeah, I would say predictable and who I'd want to travel and where I'd want to travel. So my food fantasy is backpacking, grabbing a backpack filled with a bunch of things that I need that are necessity, and walking through the streets of Vietnam and just experiencing the whole culture of the Vietnamese, learning their cooking, spending some time with the street cooks, if you'd like to call them, street chefs, if they can be called that, and just getting deep in there, getting into their heritage, finding out why their dishes and their cuisine is just so flavorful and what they do, learning techniques, and then perhaps bringing it back to Dubai and opening a Vietnamese restaurant in here. But I would like to travel with, and this is the predictable part.
Oh, no, who?
Gordon Ramsay.
Oh, I thought you were going to say some, like, Victoria's Secret model or something. Yeah, Gordon Ramsay. I mean, you could have separate rooms in the hostel, right? You wouldn't want a bunk bed with him.
Yeah, I wouldn't want a bunk bed with him. I actually want to stay as far away as possible from him.
But then eat with him every night.
But then eat with him, that's it. Yeah.
So Vietnam with Gordon Ramsay, that's not that predictable.
Well, he's done a cookbook, and he traveled, or he was traveling Cambodia, actually. So he has a cookbook cooking in Cambodia.
What's your favorite Vietnamese dish?
Oh, there's just so many. I can't think of one to name right now. But yeah, anything to do with Vietnamese food is just phenomenal.
Like it a lot. Yeah. Now, Chef Athena, you're a regular on the show, but I was wondering if you've got a new food fantasy to share with us.
Oh, a new one.
A new one.
There's a restaurant I went to in San Francisco called Manelium, and it was outstanding fine dining vegan cuisine, which is rare because you go to lots of places and it's casual, and sometimes some vegan restaurants have like some incense burning in the corner and, you know, like a hippie dippy tie-dye shirt on the wall. And, you know, you want, especially as a chef, you want to be inspired by exciting ingredients and like beautiful plating, which is missing, I find, quite often. But Manelium was phenomenal. And since I left America, they've moved to another part of San Francisco, and I just want to go back.
Go full food fancy, get them to come to Dubai and open a branch. wow, even better.
Yeah, it would be good. It would be good, but also, you know, I want to go back to California.
Maybe not quite the same. So we are talking food this afternoon, and I really want to hear. Now, Athena mentioned your mum's in town at the moment.
Yeah, my mum's staying.
Did a ladies' night last night.
Oh, stop it!
I love it.
I'm recovered. I'm fully recovered now.
No, I think it's awesome taking your mum on a ladies' night.
Oh yeah, my mum would be out every evening if she could. Like she's a lot of fun.
So tell us, is your mum vegan too?
Yeah, my mum went vegan four and a half years ago now, and she I just forwarded her my usual documentaries, the YouTube list of documentaries, sent her to watch Gary Yourofsky's speech on YouTube, and then she just said to me, that's it, like, I'm vegan now. And she came off her cholesterol medication, and she has come off her blood pressure medication. She always had high blood pressure. And that's it. She's just thriving, and people can't believe. I will not say her age on air. I will not say it, but people cannot. People honestly, legitimately guess she's 20 years younger than her actual age.
Show me a photo. I have to say, I know you were out last night. You are glowing. It's absolutely sickening.
I do have makeup on, but thank you.
Just take the compliment. And so your mum's been vegan for 4.5 years. Yep. How long have you been vegan for?
Five years. Yeah, because before that I would eat everything under the sun, and I went traveling in Vietnam, and before I was vegan, and they have phenomenal street food. The food there is amazing. But yeah, five years now, and I had lots of health issues, and I wore glasses my whole life, and I had dry eye and double vision, and after 3 months raw, I've never worn my glasses ever again.
What?
And I'm I'm not raw now. I eat all sorts of cooked vegan food, but none of my health issues have come back.
So you did a kind of very extreme switch.
Yeah, I went fruitarian overnight. And I healed everything. I believe everything you put in your mouth, you're either like fighting disease or causing it. And I wouldn't have believed it unless I had experienced it firsthand.
Four bananas every morning.
More than four. Yeah.
No shame in that game. So we're talking food this afternoon, and Chef Jet has just given us a really fantastic Tom Yum soup. Chef Jet, what is in that? What is making that kind of piquant, tangy flavour that it's so famed for? What ingredients?
Ingredient is from lemongrass, you know. The flavor of the lemongrass in tom yum soup is make you, they have oil, they have aroma. That one make more flavor. Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah, you can taste, you can feel, right?
I know. It feels like health-giving. I feel perkier having some of your tom yum soup. I really do. And it's served with shrimp as well. Yeah. Really plump, juicy shrimp.
Yeah, the shrimp is very fresh. If you can taste everywhere in Dubai also, for me, I can guarantee our taste of the shrimp is the fresh from the...
And I found that tom yum soup can be a little bit fishy.
This isn't
and
fishy.
Come across really fishy. And that is really, is a really great tom yum soup. And it's not fishy, as you say.
As an executive chef here, how do you kind of deal with sourcing and seasonality? What kind of challenges or you know, advantages do you see to being in Dubai as a chef?
I don't see any challenges per se. But I mean, everything is imported. There are some items that are difficult to source, but I think everything is imported if you're willing to pay the price, because everything comes at a price. But it is. I think if you just have a really good relationship with your suppliers and they're able to understand you, and they're able to grasp the concept that you're trying to perceive or trying to give, they can get on board and they can try and source you the best products out there. And it's a good thing to use your suppliers, and if they don't stock an ingredient that you're looking for, source it. You don't have to do that groundwork
Are you growing anything yourself? Are you working with any farms regionally?
Yeah, we have some local organic farms that we actually now in the as much as possible, and we have a majority organic menu, and like the local kale has been phenomenal. Yeah. And the root vegetables and the beetroot and the cherry tomatoes are crazily good, and
they
especially
are.
Yeah,
because I always used to joke from like 10 years ago in Dubai, I know I'd travel outside and go, I just had a tomato, it tasted like a tomato. They don't taste like that. But recently I've been going to the farmers markets and buying, and things are tasting like tomatoes again.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think Dubai suffered with that in a couple of years ago, where the produce wasn't as good as it is now.
So it's come on leaps and bounds in the last couple of years. And, you know, you go down to the farmers market in Business Bay, and it started off as a few stalls, and now it's bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's become this real foodie hub and foodie community where you can go and taste and try, and people are so inclusive and friendly. And yeah, it's really nice good there. Value as well.
Yeah.
That, I think there's this big misconception about eating organic means it always being expensive, and it, in some areas and some products it definitely is, but when it comes to going to farmers markets and buying, it's actually very well priced.
For fruit here I find it extortionate at times for organic, but for vegetables, for the locally grown stuff, it's extremely affordable, and for the, especially kale and leafy greens and lettuces, I mean, why wouldn't you buy it local and organic, especially at a great price?
Now, I've got a kale problem. What I normally do is I buy it and I put it in the fridge, and then about 4 days later I throw it out because I haven't done anything with it. That's the Helen Farmer recipe for kale. What should I be doing with it?
You either want to have it raw and cut it small and massage it with a really nice dressing, like a tahini, lemon, paprika dressing, so it's creamy, and you're massaging it to break the cellulose down, which make it palatable. You can cook it as you would spinach, but then also one of my favourite things to do is to make a smoothie with mango and kale. It's such a nice combination. No milk, or no almond milks, nothing like that, just water, fresh mangoes and kale, and that's a good
kale's one. Really good in a smoothie. I pop some kale in my smoothies as well.
Yeah, really,
and I don't like kale on its own, but I do a really good salad with chickpeas and kale, and again massaging it with a lemon tahini dressing.
Yeah, you've got to massage it.
Got to massage that kale. Chef Jets is nodding along as well. It's been a really fantastic time with you guys this afternoon. Chef Jet, thank you so much for bringing in your food. It's been a real treat, and we're definitely going to come along to the restaurant. Chef Kevin, thank you for sharing all of your insights.
You're absolutely welcome.
And eating the food as well. And Athena, massive bonus to get your amazing vegan pad thai.
Thank you very much.
And have a lovely weekend, everybody. Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
I've got some really exciting chats coming up. We spoke to Chef Virgilio Martinez, Jeff Galvin and Gio, Jamie Bissonette and Ken Oringo about their eateries at City Walk. Some amazing insights from some amazing chefs. Stay with us.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.